attaboy. Yeah, that's right. We're going to ride farther and faster than the normal ride. Oh, yeah, boy. You're ready. Saddle's on and cinched up tight. Stick that head over here and let me get that bit in your mouth. Now the bridle's on. We have a special ride today, Lightning. It's a super stud cast day. Time to give our fans the very best. And we're going to climb a couple of wrestling mountains and ride into history.
Welcome, patrons, to part two of Super Studcast number 22. In part one, Ron invited legendary Jody Hamilton, the assassin, to join him for a very fascinating look into that masked wrestler's history. In part two, he'll be introducing a second masked star, Jerry Stubbs, Mr. Olympia. Jerry was another of the great wrestlers that were developed by Southeastern and Continental Wrestling. As always, we thank the growing number of patrons around the world for your support and hope every one of you enjoyed this deep dive into another great wrestler's career. And now, please welcome the Tennessee Stud, Ron Fuller Welch, and the great Brian Last.
Hello again, friends and patrons of the Studcast, and welcome back for another Super Studcast. This being part two of Super Studcast number 22, a masked edition of the Super Studcast. Of course, part one was with the dreaded assassin, and part two, which we're going to tell you about in just a moment, with Mr. Olympia, Jerry Stubbs. This is going to be a big episode. We're going to get him on the line in just a few moments. But first, the man of the hour, the host of the Studcast, the host of the Super Studcast, the legendary Tennessee Stud himself, Mr. Ron Fuller. Ron, how are you today? Another Super Studcast ready for us.
Yes, sir, man. And I'm ready for it. Think we got a great person here to speak with. But before we go there, Brian, I'd like to talk just very shortly here, very briefly about the next Super Studcast, part one of number 23. And sometimes I don't have the people lined up, but I do on this one, and I'm pretty happy about this. We're going to be talking to Greg the Hammer Valentine for part one of number 23. And yeah, I really look forward to that. Had a lot of experiences with his father, Johnny Valentine. Spent a lot, probably had 100 matches or more with Johnny Valentine. And really looking forward to spending some time with his son, Greg Valentine. And great family, too, of wrestlers, just like my family and my history. But today, we have someone that kind of got his start for me. With Southeastern and Knoxville, actually was coming down and just wrestling on some televisions for me, doing jobs for people, and worked his way up through the company. And as we went to Pensacola in the late 70s, he's going to arrive there too, and he's not going to be doing jobs on TV at that point. He's become a pretty darn good worker. He's going to go on to have a fantastic career as Jerry Stubbs, and in part one, as you mentioned earlier, in number 22, we had the assassin, and I thought this episode, part two, being with another masked man, and oddly enough, these two masked men both living in Atlanta, Georgia, so it's really crazy, but we're going to be getting in touch with a guy that has really made a great name for himself. Mid-South, a lot of different territories, wrestled Japan, Australia, all kinds of places. And I'm real happy. He's a great guy. He's a tremendous role model for young wrestlers, especially when Arn Anderson came along in Southeastern in Pensacola. This is the guy that probably helped Arn Anderson as much as anybody ever did. So without further ado, I guess, my man, let's see if we can hook up with Jerry Stubbs, Mr. Olympia.
All right, Ron, it appears he is on the line right now.
Hello?
Hello, Jerry. This is your old buddy, Ron Fuller, my man. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How about you?
Oh, I'm doing all right. You know, down here in Tampa today, got some pretty nice weather, and great to be able to talk to you. We've seen each other quite a bit in the last few years, which is, you know, probably I've seen you, I guess, more than most any of the guys that I've been around in a long, long time. Because we do some, we've been to some matches in Dothan together, and you are still a little bit involved in wrestling in some ways, and that's pretty good. Yeah.
Just, you know, the older I get, the more I want to do so I can just keep going. You know, I don't want to stop. But everybody I see stops gets, you know, they're not around too long.
Yeah. Keep active if you're going to stay here a while, maybe, huh?
I hope so. That's what I plan on.
So we're just going to have some fun here today, Jerry. I wanted to kind of start it off for people that don't know you, certainly as well as I do, with where you were born. Where were you born, man?
I was born here in Atlanta, Georgia. I turned 68 this year.
So
September 13th was on a Friday, and I turned 68 years old.
Jeez, man. That's a darn good deal, man. You know, I'm not going to tell you, but I've got you beat by a little bit.
But, tell you, you know, you look around and a lot of us are not here anymore, you know. So I'm trying to stay busy and active, so at least I can, you know, keep going. I don't want to settle down too much. I have had heart surgery, you know. I had a four-way bypass several years back.
Right.
And I've just gone through my second pacemaker. It seemed like it's doing pretty good. So I feel like I'm the bionic man sometimes.
you've been slid a few times, huh? You've had a little operations there. So Jerry, for fans that out there that don't know, I know you were a pretty darn decent athlete in high school. You were just south part of Atlanta.
Right. Yeah, I was south of Atlanta. I played baseball, basketball, a little bit of football. Wasn't a big football star, but and so on. But anyway, yeah, I played basketball and baseball. Actually, I played basketball against your brother, Rob.
Yeah.
Robert.
Yeah. You know, he was at McDonough, and you were what's the town? You're in Jonesboro.
Forest Park.
Okay.
Yeah.
So.
So we weren't too far. In between each other, and I kind of knew him anyway because my cousin lived down in McDonough where they went to school, and I kind of knew him that way too. And it kind of helped me get into the business when I started my career as wrestling. You know, I used to be a policeman also.
Right. Yeah, I know you've had that police background, and I knew that Mike Stallings. You have a cousin that used to wrestle too. He was a pretty decent athlete too, pretty good athlete too. And he actually broke in, did some wrestling for me in Southeastern in Knoxville, kind of like you did, man.
Right, yeah. And he actually kind of got me, you know, y'all brought me up there and kind of got me a start because I was here in Atlanta and wasn't working too much, but got to start on TV a couple of times. But being a policeman, you know, you get whooped on TV a lot. You have to take a lot of harassment.
Oh, yeah.
I took a few of those, you know, in my day, too, by doing both. But it was fun. It was fun, you know. I came up with you in Knoxville. And I was the matador. I wore the mask as the matador.
Right. Yep, I remember. You know. And how did you get interested in the business?
Was around here in Atlanta, you know, and all that. And Robert, you know, kind of, I knew him and my cousin so close that, excuse me, I got a little cough today, but I guess that's coming with old age. But anyway, you know, Robert was kind of down here in this area working in Atlanta, him and so a few more. So they just, you know, I worked out with them, you know, on the side and actually got hooked up with Rocky Johnson. And we'd go down to Griffin a lot. They had a ring down there set up most of the time. And he took me down there on weekends and, actually knew Rock when he was a little fuzzy haired kid, about 3, 4, 5 years old.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, The Rock. Yeah. For people who don't know Rocky Johnson, that's The Rock's dad.
Right. You know, and, yes.
No, good wrestler, too. Heck of a wrestler, too. And, you know, great guy. Really, really great guy.
Mm-hmm.
So, who trained you? Other than, did you work out with people other than Rocky?
Well, Robert, Mike helped me a lot. And mostly just, you know, got in it and they threw me to the wolves. And kind of learn on my own. If I was going to stay in it, I kind of had to get with it, you know. But
right.
So I just jumped in there with the best of them, you know, and hung with it. I really just hung with it and so on. And just kept moving, you know, kept going, you know.
So when you came to Knoxville, what year was that you first came up and started doing some TVs?
I think I started that in like 1980, 81, somewhere in there.
So who did you like, you've been around for a long darn time, man. You've had a lot of experience. You've been the masked wrestler and a darn good one, I might add.
Thank you.
Who did you like to work with, man, during your career? Who did you really, I guess we all have some guys we had better matches with and got along great with or whatever. But.
Right. I always like to work against Bob Armstrong. Me and the Bullet, we've had fuses and feuds and feuds and feuds, and they've been some great ones.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Bob Armstrong, he was a good one, and... You know, and when I was a junior champion, you know, that was kind of in my little prime there, too, before I moved on up and got with the big boys. I enjoyed my Dickie Steinborn and Les Thornton and a lot of those guys back in the day working as a junior champion, you know, for y'all.
Yeah.
And I kept that down in the southeast, down with your territory in there for a long, long time. And then finally, I just, you know, I started gaining a little more weight, working out a little harder and got a little bigger. And you know, actually, I'm going to let you in on a secret. You might not know this, but when I became Mr. Olympia under the mask, actually, Bob Armstrong was the one that brought it up and said that's what I should do.
Yeah, I think you told me one time he gave you the name. He's the one that came up with the name, the idea.
Yeah, he kept seeing me work out in the gym and work out. And he said, man, you're getting to look like a hawk. He said, you need to put the mask on and go as Mr. Olympia. He said, I think you'd do real good. And, you know, I did that. So I did it. And, you know, I kind of left Southeastern and went over to Mid-South with Bill Watts and Junkyard Dog, Ted DiBiase, and a lot of those. Got to work with those, you know, a good bit and learned a little more. Everywhere I went, I learned. And then I came back because Southeastern was always my, I guess, the love, you know, the love of where I like to be. And tried to stay there as long as I could. And I've been on the good side and I've been on the bad side. And sometimes you just got to do what you got to do to stay somewhere.
Well, you mentioned a couple of really good names there with that junior, defending that junior title. Les Thornton in particular, Tony Charles.
Tony Charles, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of boys that, wow.
They can get up and go, I can tell you.
Yes, sir, man. Both of those guys are really darn good. And, you know, I was always lucky, man. I felt lucky to have those guys hanging around and doing some of that junior heavyweight stuff. And especially Tony, I mean, once he went to Pensacola with me, he never left. Mm-hmm. He just made it home.
He did. Yeah, he did. Well, a lot of us stayed there as long as we could, you know, didn't want to go. It's such a nice territory, you know. You got the beach. You could go work out in the morning, go sit on the beach for a while. And the trips wasn't that long. You know, you had a few long ones, but everybody, you know, you just had a good group, you know, that liked working against each other, you know. I did. I enjoyed it. I like working both ways, you know. Some people just said, hey, I was unpredictable, but that's the way I wanted it to be.
You get a lot of mileage.
I know it. I could do it either way, and I enjoy doing it either way. If I had a match going sour and we're like two good guys, you know, hey, I don't mind being mean.
Yeah.
I kind of like being mean, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I had the same experience, man, going from babyface to heel and babyface to heel and back and forth. And, you know, I kind of enjoy it. I enjoy it. Which one of those do you like working better, man? Heel or babyface?
I like to be a heel.
Yeah.
I like to be a heel. I can mess with the crowd and you know, they like messing with me and so on and so on. I just like being the bad boy. You know, being a good guy is fun, you know, and you get to please a lot of the people, you know, but it's really good when you can please them and make them mad at the same time.
I'm gonna change it up on you. I ask you who you like to work with. Who did have you not liked to work with, man?
Oh man, shoot. I guess pretty much everybody I like to work with. There's a few that you didn't like. Now I like wrestling too, Mr. Wrestling too. But I didn't like working with him because, man, he'd wear you out with that knee. And he hit you so hard, you know, slap you on the back. I don't know how many times you had it.
Oh,
I had it quite a few times. And
yeah.
I'm telling you, I don't know what hurt worse, the knee in the chest or the slap on the back. You know, so I didn't really want to work with him too much. And I tell you something else, you know, these people that's like overseas and all that, like these to eat a lot of garlic. And Les Thornton, he loved garlic, boy. And you get out there and he gets you in a headlock and he smell like garlic, you know, and I'd almost pass out and give me a headlock. You know, and I said, oh man, I don't know if I can work with him anymore with that garlic the way he eat it. It's like make me go pass out. You know.
So,
pretty much, you know, I like working with everybody. I guess I got used to it coming up and didn't know too much when I started because everybody tried to abuse me a little bit. And that's one thing I like about wrestling, too. He told me, don't let them. I don't care what you do, don't let them. And I tried not to let them, but rough go there sometimes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, man. You know, some guys could make it a long night for you if they wanted to.
Yeah.
And that's kind of why I asked about who didn't like to work with because – you know, there's a lot of guys. I had a few in my career, Johnny Valentine's and the Hans Schmitz.
Greg Valentine, too. So I know who you're talking about, Greg Valentine. I didn't too much like working with him, either.
Well, he got some of that from his daddy, I think.
that's what I hear. That's what I hear.
So when you were in Knoxville, go ahead.
When I was in Knoxville, what?
Yeah, when you were in Knoxville, how did you like working up there in that
area? Oh man, it was a nice place to work. You know, the atmosphere was good anywhere you went. You know, we went to Clark. I think I went to Clarksville up there once, Tennessee, and we went somewhere. We went up the mountains, and you'll probably remember this too. And then we came down the mountain of right where, and you know, we came into a place where we was going to work. And they wasn't a car, they wasn't hardly nothing. But when you went in the building, it was full.
Yeah.
I mean, it was full of people. And I said, where did these people come from? And they just said, hey, they come from out of the mountain here. They just come down the mountain.
Oh, yeah. Didn't have big cities and didn't have any flat land. So the cities were kind of built into the valleys Everybody lived outside the city, and they would come from everywhere, especially for wrestling. Back in those days, we had it really hot. Southeastern was going big time from about 76 on. And, you know, cities like Harlan, we used to work in Harlan and
Harlan and Hazard.
Yeah.
There was Spitfires. You know, we worked outside most of the time at those places.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was nice. That was one of the best territories. It and Pensacola area down in that way, you couldn't beat them.
Yeah.
You just couldn't beat them.
So
some nice places to go.
When did you come to Southeastern and Pensacola, man? Because I know that originally when I started there in 78, you weren't a part of that crew, but Mike Stallings was. Your cousin was part of that crew in 78 down there. And you were probably still going and working shows in Knoxville at that time.
Right, right.
And when did you come into Southeastern in Pensacola?
I think it's somewhere around 81, close to 82.
Right.
Yeah, I think it was closer to 82 and all that. And we started doing TVs and stuff like that. Because I think then I went to over to Mid-South for a while, too, and then came back. Because the whole time I was working out, I was trying to get something done, and that's when I kind of put the mask on and left and on up in 80, almost 90 when I went over there.
Yeah.
Because I didn't stay, and I worked with Junkyard Dog, Ted DiBiase, Jim Duggan, a lot of those guys. Ernie Ladd, you know, was there. Bill Watts, he worked a little bit. It was a territory that was pretty going pretty strong at that time, you know.
Oh yeah, he had a really rocking.
I got to team up with Junkyard Dog, and then when I turned on him, I thought I wasn't gonna get out of New Orleans that night. But you know, he was way over. You know, it was nothing for him to go out in an arena and sell 10,000 pictures in one night.
Right.
I seen it done. And then the office kind of took over the picture taking and giving us a percentage and all that. But, it was a nice place to work, but I still, it ain't nothing like Southeastern and that Knoxville area.
Well, he came through there. You know that, Junkyard Dog came through there, mm-hmm. Sylvester Ritter came in there in probably 1976, 77, mm-hmm. and right. stayed for a right. little bit. And I'd send him on to Watts because he was such a talent, man. That guy was, I knew he was going to make somebody some huge money.
Right. I guess the first territory that I ever went to, I think I stayed for like 3 months or 6 months, was up in the Charlotte area.
Right.
That was actually the first one I went to and worked with Bill White, who taught me a lot. And he was rougher as rough could be. And we had some matches that you just wouldn't believe. I remember working with Brad Armstrong down there in Southeastern and Birmingham and places like that. That's the way me and Bill White used to work up in Charlotte. And that Brad was some worker, man. He was one of the best.
Oh, he really was, man. He was tremendous. Fabulous talent in the ring.
Oh, he was great. He was great. Yeah.
I never got to work with him that much. Me and Rob and Jimmy, we were at one time there, heels, big time heels. Mm-hmm. And Bob right. turned back baby face and got to work with Brad some there. But I love working with him. He was a really tough kid. I remember the first time he got any blood was in Mobile. He was working in a tag match with the Midnight Express, the original Midnight Express, with Dennis Condrey, Randy Rose, and Norvell Austin. And I think Condrey cut him and hit an artery. And, you know, Brad, he was so gung-ho, man, as a young kid and getting his act together. And there was his first night that he ever bled. And it was horrible. I went in the dressing room. I went in his dressing room just to see how bad he was. And they were packing him up to take him to the hospital. And, you know, he was really, really, but he was so on fire and enthused about the great match. He just kept, Ron, was it good? Was it good?
Right.
It's like, Brad, come on. Geez, if it had been any better, man, we'd have had a big riot here, you know. I mean, those guys really had some heat back in those days there, too. And, you know, what a great guy to work with, though. And you know, working with Tony Charles as an example, did he ever do that? He used to do that really unusual bump. He did a lot of those English moves, and he would he would set you up and be on his back, and you would throw your legs up in the air, and when you would come down, drop on his stomach a couple of times, he would bridge kind of, and then he would shoot those legs up into your back where your thighs were, and stand you up. And then come up in the air. Do you ever do that bump with you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he did it. He did a lot of time with me. Of course, you know, we were working for the Junior Heavyweight Championship. And we worked so much together, I just caught on his style, you know, was able to do some things with his style that made us both look good. And he'd make you look good anyway. He'd always make you look as good as he could possibly make you. And that's what was good about that territory down there. All the guys worked together, you know, to make the thing a hit and to do what we could to draw people and make it where people would want to come.
Yeah, you can't go out there and be working with somebody that don't like to work with you and that doesn't care whether they have a good match or not. I mean, all that is a, you know, it's a mindset for a territory. And, you know, and once you get the right guys and they've got that attitude, it just balloons. That brings to mind another guy that started down there working on TV for us that goes on to become your partner and goes on to become a superstar in the sport, Arn Anderson.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know, he worked – well, actually, we were working some over in Watts' territory, and I was Mr. Olympia at that time, too. He was wrestling as Marty Lundy, and we brought him in as Super Olympia to work with me, and then eventually we turned on each other and so on and so on. But, yeah, now he was a great worker. Oh, great worker. And, you know, he got that, you know, people come down and work with us down in Pensacola and all that. They didn't really want to leave. They wanted to stay down there for a while, you know, because it's such a good place to be and work at the same time. And that's why we had so much talent wanting to come through to stay a week or two, you know, and work with us guys. And we got a chance to work with different, wrestlers in the territories. So it was just a great place to live and work.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I remember they used to come out of Memphis some. Bill Dundee, I remember, came down there.
Yeah.
He was going to stay 2 days, and he stayed 2 weeks. And I remember, I love telling the story, Saito was there in that time frame. And I was standing by him one night. We were watching Saito working with somebody, and he did that single leg takedown. He did was a really nasty looking move, man. It was like,
right.
Don't break somebody's leg, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Dundee's standing next to me, and he goes, oh, Ronnie is a, that, I don't want to work with him, Ron. You know, I said, what do you mean you don't want to work with him? Oh, no. He goes, look, I never seen anybody do that with a leg. You know, gosh, that looked pretty nasty, you know. And so he was there for 2 weeks, and I put him on the last day he was there. He was on TV, and I put him in the ring with Saito. And he was like, oh, darn, Ron, I was going to get out of here without you doing that. But he was one of those guys that came for 2 days and ended up staying for 2 weeks. Would have stayed for 2 years if he had let him.
Yeah, right.
A lot of guys really enjoyed it down there. It was really a great place.
It was fun. It was just a good place to be, good territory, short times. You got to be with your family also and have a good time and work with a bunch of great people coming through. You know, Flair, Rusty Rhodes, all those people, they all came through.
Yeah.
The Briscoes.
Like you were saying, you and Arn actually worked tag. You worked tag for a while. Then you worked an angle and you worked against Arn quite a bit. I know that you and Arn, we used you and Arn. Y'all were tag team champions, and Bob had done the deal with me with Ric Flair. In the world championship match, turned heel, been a great heel for months and months.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got ready to turn him back babyface. And I was trying to figure out, man, how are we going to do this? Who's got the clout to get this over? And you and Arn were a great tag team. Y'all were the champions. And I kept wanting to beat you guys. Y'all were working against me a lot. And I remember I brought Andre in. I was tag partners with Andre. We couldn't get it done in the whole deal. And then Bob, we worked the angle where Bob started coming every week to TV. and begging me to be my partner. Let me help you. Let me do it. But, you know, I just kept harping on the fact that, no, man, you almost killed me. You know, you I can't trust you, right? And I remember we did an angle on TV and where y'all got some blood on me and everybody was trying to get in there and save me, and nobody could get you guys off of me. And finally, here he came, man, out of nowhere. And, you know, he did tremendous business with that. And, you know, you guys were the perfect team to be able to put us back together as baby faces again. And
right. You know,
just we managed to do a whole lot of different type of angles there, man, over the years.
Oh, yeah. And good ones, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Really good stuff. Good ones,
yeah.
And people really got into it. People loved it. And it made sense. Everything tried to do had to make sense, or we wouldn't do it. That was for sure. And, you know, just so teaming with Arn and being away from Arn and then back again. And, you know, it was a great little group there. I had that one time period where I was wearing the tuxedo and the top hat and the cane and managing a whole group of heels. God, humongous, Arn, I don't remember all the darn heels I was managing.
You had all that stuff. You had the stud stable, man.
I had the stable going, and that was the first time there'd ever been a stud stable. And boy, I had it filled with guys. I think you might have had a little run in there, too, as one of those guys.
I did.
So, you know.
Midnight Express and me.
It
was a good one, you know. And, two, when I teamed with Dirty White Boy, Tony Anthony, that we had a good one going. You know, the Dirty White Boys and back in the day. They he worked real good. You know, back in that.
Oh, heck yeah. Yeah, he came in the latter part of the 80s there. And got over really good, too. So I guess I don't need to even ask you how you like Pensacola. I mean, what a beautiful area.
Oh,
right?
Man. Oh,
I remember you being brown, man. That's all I remember is you had the darkest tan of anybody, I believe.
Yeah, I had a good tan. Yeah, was working out real good, had a good tan, looked real good, you know, back in that day. That was some of my junior championship back in that day, you know. So,
everybody in the crew was big time in the gym, man. You know, it was during that time frame where guys were trying to get those better bodies and stuff. And some of them were cheating a little bit and shooting stuff every once in a while to add a little muscle. I remember coming out of Mobile with Arn. Me and Arn had made the trip, and we stopped to come across the bridge there out of Mobile going toward Pensacola. And that first exit, there was a little 7-Eleven there. And we stopped in there, and Arn had been really hitting the weights, man. He was really keyed up. Guys started on him. We got out of the car and went into the deal, and some guys had been to the matches in Mobile, and they were waiting. They knew, I guess, we came to that place to get beer. And Arn got him a couple of six-packs of beer, and I noticed that when we went out the door, they were still sitting there. They had their pickup truck, and they were backed off from the front of the store, maybe about 50 feet, fairly close to the road. They weren't parked where everybody else was. And as soon as we came out, they started on him. And they started on me, too, but I just didn't pay any attention to him. But Arn had been on that sauce a little bit, and by gosh, he wasn't going to let it go, right?
So he fired up.
And I saw him getting pissed, you know, and I said, hey, Arn, it's okay, it's okay. And he goes, oh, no, it ain't, Ron. And he grabs a bottle of his beer, and he throws that bottle of beer through their front windshield of their truck.
Yeah.
It was like the glass all shattered. I was like, wow, man, what is that all about? And so then the guys, they got their car, they got their truck started, and they took off. We got in the car. We got in the car, and we probably didn't go 3 miles, and the cop pulled us over. They had already got in touch with the cops, and they were behind the cop. And so the cop gets out, and he comes, and he sees who it is. And he's like, you know, he's trying to be a nice guy. And he goes, "Eh, well, you know, what happened? And, well, they were harassing us. And, you know, and Arn got a little upset. And, you know, so then finally the cop says, let me go back there and talk to those boys. And he goes back and talks to them in their truck back there. And they've still got a hole in their windshield with a beer. And then he comes back and they drive off. And then the cop comes back, and I'm figuring at this point, I don't know, man, this is looking bad. Arn's gonna have to go in. And anyway, he comes back, and it turns out he's a big, huge fan. He goes, "Boy, I really love you guys. I love watching you all wrestle." And, you know, he says, "I took care of that. You know, those guys are gone." You know, so he said, "I told those boys, I better get their asses out of here. I'm going to take them." So, yeah, you know, we had some real times there, though, man. A lot of guys there had their boats and, you know, it was a beautiful place to live. And you know, your longest trip was 250 miles, basically. And you only had that once a week.
Yeah.
Yeah. One time a week, you had a fairly long trip and, you know, get home early and be home with your family and in a beautiful city in which the beach is there and everything. Wow. Did you know, I don't know if you even knew this, but years before that was when it was Gulf Coast Wrestling, do you know that most of those guys that in that territory lived in Mobile rather than
Right, Pensacola? They did. Yeah, yeah.
When I bought it, I decided, you know, I hung around Pensacola for a few days and I thought, well, man, why would you want to live in Mobile when you got this beautiful beach here? You
know, right. So,
and right. I kind of set it up to where we lived in Pensacola. And boy, I was never sorry about that guy. Because if you've ever been to the beach in Mobile, there's a lot of difference between the water in Mobile and 50 miles east of there in Pensacola. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. Right. It seemed like it was brown over toward Mobile.
Yeah.
It was nice and bluish green over there in Pensacola.
There you go. And, you know, and what happens, you got that old Mississippi River that's dumping all that dirt and that mud into the Gulf of Mexico, and it filters on across the southern end of Mississippi and on into Alabama. But somewhere between Mobile and Pensacola, that water gets crystal clear, and it's just beautiful.
It does, man. It makes it
a nice place. I got a couple questions for you. I like to ask guys this sometimes about riots, man. Have you been in riots? I mean, as a heel, have you had many riot situations?
Yeah, several. When we were up in, me and DiBiase was working with Bill Watts. We went up to Tulsa, Oklahoma at the fairgrounds. This is one big one we had. Up there, it was me and him against Wrestling 2 and Tiger Conway, Jr. And, we had done something to Wrestling 2 and so on and so on. And up there, we didn't have really, regular police officers. We had like security people, you know, and, it was crowded. Oh, it was just, we were doing good in that territory too. And it's me and Ted DiBiase, we did something to Wrestling 2 and then, got on Tiger Conway, and after the match was over, we won, you know, and so on. It was like six deep. When we got out of the ring, it was like six people deep all the way around the ring before we could get anywhere. And the security guards left us.
Yeah.
They left us. They run toward the back, or they just left us and couldn't get us back to the back. And a lot of the guys were standing up there on the stage in the back. Well, they had to come down and fight their way through there to get us. And some guy had bit DiBiase's finger almost off. We had to go to the hospital that night and get that fixed because, you know, a human bite, they say, is worse than a dog bite.
Oh, yeah.
So we went over there to do that, you know, and we were fighting, man. I mean, really fighting. And we were in Richmond, Virginia one night, Steamboat and Flair. And something happened in the last match or whatever, man, and we all had to go down, and I mean, I ain't never seen so many chairs come in the ring in my life. You know, every time you turn around, chairs were pop, pop, popping, coming in the ring. Didn't know they could throw them that far, you know. And then in Japan, several of them in Japan, when we went to Japan, me and Tiger Jet Singh, you know, against Baba and Inoki or somebody like that, the top guys, hey, we had to fight our way back a lot of nights, you know.
Yeah, those Japanese people are crazy. No.
Oh, they're rough, man. They either like you or they don't like you.
Yeah.
There ain't no two ways, you know.
I've seen them have riots in opposite directions there with Brody and Hanson. Brody and Hanson come out the dressing room and they all run back there like they're going to get close to him, and Hanson have his rope and Brody have a big old logging chain, and I mean there would be bodies laying all the way back to the dressing room. It looked like a riot had taken place, and it was just those guys coming to the ring.
I was Tiger Jet Singh. He wore this so turban, you know, and he had this like sword like with a ball on the end of it. And he would beat them to death. He said, just stick with me. Because I went over there as Ah Sheik a couple of times and was his partner. And he said, just hang on to me. He beat them Japanese boys to death going to the ring, coming back.
With
thing, you know.
Yeah.
Hey, it's rough. It's rough over there.
Really hell, rough. They were Brody and them. They didn't care. They were bad on fans. They were worse on fans than they were on guys in the ring. Sometimes I saw those two guys go through whole sections ringside, just send bodies flying, the chairs going everywhere, flying all over. And you know, you would think the fans were after them, but it's actually them making their way through the ringside, just clearing people out. Instead of walking the aisles, they would go to the middle of a section and then come right through all the section. And, then they'd get in the ring and they'd be laughing, laughing like hell. And Japanese people, it'd take them 20 minutes to set their chairs back up. You know, the match would be half over. And they still over there trying to fix that section that they'd destroyed. No, I was like,
rough, man. I mean, rough. I mean, fight. And, you know, I ain't tell you what, I ain't never been nowhere where you could get beer out of the Coke machine. Over there, they had vending machines. You could just go and get your beer right out of the dang vending machine.
Yeah. Oh, boy, I'm telling you, man, a lot of other things, man. I was there in 83, and the technology there was unbelievable. They used to have the bars in the room, and you would take something out, and it would register downstairs at the desk. This was way, way back before we had that type of stuff here in this country.
I was there with Terry Funk, and Terry Funk took they run us out of one of the nicest, prettiest hotels you ever seen in your life down in over there in Japan. I think it was Osaka or Sapporo or wherever it was, but it was a nice high-rise motel. He came in. He didn't like it because the room was small. So he comes and he takes the bed and throws it right out the window, man. Throws it right 14 floors down and it lands in the swimming pool, but it's in January. It's cold. So, you know, wasn't nobody there. He threw it right out, man. They gathered us all up, took us to another motel. They kicked us all out.
He came to my room one night, and we were there 83, and he was going to have a part in the Rhinestone Cowboy in the movie. He was going to actually sing a song in the movie, and he had his guitar with him the whole tour. And he was trying to sing his song on the trains and on the planes and the whole damn deal, you know. And every time he did, everybody was like, "Oh, Terry, it's horrible, man. You ain't going to be able to keep working there, man. You ain't going to take you in that movie." "Oh, yeah, they are. Yeah, they are." And he came to my room one night, and they had the little doorbells on the rooms there. You know, they'd ring the door just like like a door at your home. The doorbell rang about 4 in the morning, and I go, "Who is it?" And I hear this voice outside. Goes, "Oh, I'm on the Mise en Masse," like a little woman, right?
Yeah.
What the heck is that? You know? And then I don't go. I just lay in the bed. ding, 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 phone, the bell rings again. So this goes on about three or four times. I can't stake it. Okay, all right, I'm going to get this woman out of here. And I go open the door, and it's Terry. And he's got some beers. He comes in, he wants to drink some beers with me. And they played, I guess, Terry and Junior, did they do a lot of those deals they did when I was there? About, you ever see them do the one where they draw the little circle on the wall somewhere, and then they put their hand over their eyes and they walk across the airport terminal or wherever they are, trying to put their finger in the, you ever see them do that game?
Oh, yeah.
Crazy. He had done that game with the director of the movie. A Rhinestone Cowboy movie. And he'd done that game and had the director be the one to come across there to stick his finger in Terry's butt. It was like, so Terry comes in and he's all depressed. He's got his beer and he says, oh, I got to have somebody, Ron, to drink with. You know, I said, well, what's the deal, Terry? You upset or what? And he, yeah, Ron. He goes, I lost my part in the movie. I said, well, hell, man, how'd you do that, Terry? And he goes, well, you remember that little game me and Junior play, you know, in the airport and all that? He goes, well, you know, I did that with the director of the movie in front of the whole cast. I said, God, Terry, why would you pick that guy, the director, to do the deal with? Well, right. I don't know, Ron. I didn't think right about it. I should have, you know. But anyway, he was all down depressed. He lost his part in the movie, man. They weren't going to let him in it anyway. He couldn't sing, so he didn't have a chance getting in it.
There's some crazy people over there, Robert. They're crazy. I mean, when they went over there, they did some crazy things. I was over there with Kurt Hennig. Kurt Hennig was over there, and we roomed together. And we was in this nice motel. I mean, they always get us kicked out of these nice motels. We were in there, you know, and we'd spent the night. We were supposed to get up early and leave and go to another town or whatever. And I hear something going. And Kurt Hennig looks at me and just kind of puts his finger over his mouth like, shh. I said, what the heck? And he just looked at me and said, don't worry about it. So when we got on the bus, one of these Japanese boys had half his mustache shaved and half his beard shaved on the other side. And when he looked in the mirror, he saw what had happened. Somebody, you know, got him drunk and shaved half his beard on one side, half his mustache on the other. And can you imagine how he looked?
Oh.
You know? And he went nuts, you know, and he was looking for somebody on the bus. He said, I'll kill. You know, and Kurt Hennig had, you know, his
Kurt did it. I'm sure Kurt did it, probably. Right?
Oh yeah, he did. He shaved that half beard off one side and half mustache shown off the other, and that Japanese boy was going nuts.
Yeah, my brother tells a really good one about Kurt doing that to Knobs on a flight back to into Tampa. When Knobs, it was his anniversary with his wife, and they got Knobs messed up, gave him beer, and then they put some kind of Valium or something in his beer or whatever.
Right.
And then they shaved his eyebrows off.
Yeah.
They put lipstick on his face. Kurt's the guy behind most of that stuff. Rob said every time he made trips with Kurt, he was never going to sleep.
I can't sleep around you, man. I told him the same thing. You're not going to cut line loss. Oh, the good old days, though. Good old days. And old Kurt, he's not with us anymore. A lot of them left us.
No, man. It's too many of them. Too many of them gone already, that's for sure. And I'll talk a little bit about Continental. So we changed the name of Southeastern to Continental about 1985. We took that program out of the studio and into Birmingham's Boutwell basically to compete with WWE, because WWE was doing that things from arenas at that point. And I felt like we needed to be out of the studio and be able to compete. And so what do you think of that program and that Continental show?
I think it was great. I think it was great. You know, we changed it. We got the Continental belt, and I was Mr. Olympia back then, too. And I guess I was probably in my prime at that time, because I remember being, you know, built up and the whole bit, because I think I got a picture around here with me in that belt. And I think it was good. I mean, it just transitioned right on into something, and as it looked like we were graduating, getting bigger, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and then brought Gordon in for the TV, and that mm-hmm. that made a little change
right
there.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So, and, you know, it was a nice size
Freddie
building.
Miller, you know, you had Freddie Miller out there doing the announcing,
yeah.
too, you know.
Yeah.
Who they had seen on Atlanta a lot, you know, Gordon and him and so on. And I think, you know, at one time you could put our show on up there with Joe Pedicino, who had all them shows at one time. And ours was even on late at night or early in the morning, 2 or 3 o'clock. And people would still tell you they stayed up and watched it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We had some great, great talent at that point, man. It was really good. Really good. So, Brian, I'm sure, man, you probably got some questions for Jerry for sure.
Let me ask you one, Jerry, because you're talking about how much you loved working in Knoxville, how much you loved working in Pensacola, and, of course, you had such great success in Mid-South. You were there when Watts took over Oklahoma, finally, from Leroy McGurk. What was the travel schedule like for you in Louisiana once Bill Watts had Louisiana and Oklahoma together?
To me, they felt long because I never, you know, really traveled any long territories or any places. But at that point, it wasn't long that I was teaming up with a Junkyard Dog, and we were kind of riding together. We'd work out and ride together and the whole bit, you know, and he wouldn't even charge me trans because he actually couldn't. He didn't sleep good at night, and he'd sleep a lot in the car on our trips during the day, and I would drive his Mercedes around, and he would never charge me a dime, and I got us everywhere we wanted to go. But I really liked that territory, but there was some time that we didn't get a day off. It was very seldom we got a day off. We'd work 2 or 3 times on Tuesday at our TVs in Shreveport. We'd go to Tulsa and Oklahoma City on some weekends, and we'd work Oklahoma City and then come back 100 miles and work Tulsa, Oklahoma, and then come all the way back to New Orleans on a Monday night and back to Shreveport on a Tuesday and then Baton Rouge on a Thursday or Friday. So it was scattered out, you know, and we did a lot of the Texas over there, Texas spot shows and up in Mississippi, Louisiana, Oklahoma. We traveled a good bit. You know, but I still hear people tell me it wasn't as bad as New York territory, the way they traveled up there. But I never worked up there, so I wouldn't know how their trips are.
Did you like working in Houston? Because, of course, you were there when Bill Watts finally bought into the Houston Wrestling Office with Peter Burkholz and Paul Bosch, and that opened up Houston to Mid-South Wrestling. Did you like going there?
Oh, yeah. I liked that spot. That was a different atmosphere now. That was a different atmosphere. If you was a heel, if you was going to be wrestling some of their favorite, just be prepared because they're not going to like you. And you're going to have to fight your way a little bit down there too. But it was a fun place. That was all in it, man. The more they wanted to fight, the more they wanted to scream and holler, the harder I worked. Yeah.
They wanted to kill you, but originally, you know, they wanted to love you because you were with the Junkyard Dog. What was that like for you? Because, of course, that may have been the peak of his in-ring work, that period of time, 1981, 1982. By 1983, he started to gain weight and things started to change. But what was it like for you to team with him, not just teaming with the most popular wrestler in the promotion, but someone who may be a little limited, who can't work really a long match, where they may have to rely on you, who was an exceptional worker?
Right. And I did. I took up a lot of the slack, but the better I could make him look and the more I could keep him in there doing what he did best and I could take the heat and we could do what we need to do, people loved it. I mean, you know, that's just what he was. He was the king. And I worked for that and I made sure that I told him, hey, just let me know. You tag in and out as quick as you want, as many times as you want. We got it. you know. And he knew that. So he'd go in there, he'd do his stuff, and he'd tag, and I'd go in and do something. They might stop me a little bit, and we'd go on and on. But we were pretty strong there for a long time. I think maybe we should have stayed together just a little bit longer before I turned on him. I think we'd have been a little bit better, but it worked good. I mean, we made money out the kazoo. Yeah.
Were you there at the Irish McNeil Boys Club the day that Orndorff worked with Larry Higgins and if the match fell apart and then there was a confrontation in the locker room?
Yes, I was. And Watts told Orndorff if he didn't do something about it, he was fired.
Oh, wow. Ron, I'm sure you don't know this match, but Larry Higgins, Hacksaw Higgins, he was just starting out, I think. He worked with Paul Orndorff, and the match fell apart, and he didn't sell, and it was one of the few matches you saw on TV where they edited it. It was clearly clipped because they couldn't show the whole thing. And then the story always was that there was a confrontation. If you watched the film later in the night, you see Larry Higgins leaving with his bags while the matches are still going on.
Oh, yeah. Bill Watts told him, if you didn't make the boy pay for what he just done, he made you look like a fool, then you can take it out, get your stuff, and hit the road. That's what he told him.
Was there a lot of stuff like that in Mid-South? With just Watts wanting you to really enforce that you're a wrestler, you have to respect the business, you have to be tough for the business?
Well, he had a saying, too. He'd tell you all, if you go to a bar and you get in a fight and you don't win, don't come back. If you get in a fight in a bar and you don't win, you lose, don't come back. I don't want you. I don't need you, and I don't want you here. And he'd tell you that. So you knew that going in. And Watts would tell you that when you did an interview and he had to do it, redo it, so on and so on. He'd get ticked off. He wanted you to do it and do it right and so on, you know. And some things he would fine you for. Some things he would give you the money back for, too. But some things he would never give you the money back. He'd fine you because you didn't dress up like you're supposed to, or you didn't come an hour ahead, or so on and so on. Depends what kind of mood he was in.
When you later on turned on the Junkyard Dog, turned on Mr. Wrestling 2, of course, they built it up for a while. When did you first find out? Because you were gone. You left Mid-South. You lost the Loser Leaves Town match at the end of 1982. And then when you came back, things really progressed. And that's when we found out you were the tippy-toe bandit, as many of us remember. But when did you find out? When did you find out the direction was going to be that you were harassing Mr. Wrestling 2 quietly? No one knew it was you.
I knew it before I left and came back. You know, we were going to do a deal that, you know, I was kind of jealous that he came in. I was the wrestler that was supposed to be there, and I'm the one that's on top, and so on and so on. And so I was mad. Didn't want him to be there, trying to make it look like somebody else was doing all this to him, and so on and so on. And then he finally, the suitcase came open and had some of his stuff in it. And then it started from there. It was a good little angle, too. It was a good one.
So here you are. You know, you had been there for a while. You had teamed with the Dog. You were one of the most popular baby faces. So what's it like for you then in New Orleans to go in there and now be a heel against the Dog in this town where they love the Dog?
It was good. I knew I was where I needed to be, right up there with Junkyard Dog. And I knew I could make him look good and not kill myself at the same time. And we could make, you know, some good money at that with that angle. And then I started teaming with DBIC, and we got something like the Rat Pack and some other stuff going. I had a manager that came in there with us, and it was good. It was clicking. Everything clicked. Everything we did right then was clicking.
You know, I asked you about the Paul Orndorff-Larry Higgins incident. I just remembered another one. Were you there for the Matt Bourne-Jim Duggan fight in the locker room?
No, I didn't see that one. Now, I did hear about it, but I didn't see that one. I think that was just before me. I think Matt was still there when I got there, but he was on his way out. Because I think me and two, I think wrestled him and DBIC somewhere.
Yeah.
A couple times.
Yeah. In terms of Watts, I was always curious because Mid-South Wrestling, one of my favorite characters on that show is Reeser Bowden, because there's no one else like him on any wrestling show, and he talks at his own pace and he takes his time. Did Watts ever lose his temper with the pace of Reeser? With just how he took his time delivering, you know, setting up a promo or giving the information about a town?
Not that when I was around, I never saw nothing like that. But, you know, he did scream at him a couple times, but nothing real, you know, out of ordinary, you know, that he did. And it's possible he did because I heard some stories, you know, but I never saw it.
You know, one other mystery that a lot of us have had about 1982 is the Mongolian Stomper. They build him up for a few weeks. They show footage of him in Georgia with Don Carson destroying guys. They bring him in for one taping. He shows up, and then he's never there again. Do you know anything about why the Stomper was in and out so quick in 82?
I think that there was some kind of something that didn't click between Bill and the Stomper. And something didn't work out, so I think they just cut that. Whatever they were going to do, they just cut that off.
Did you like Buck Robley as a booker?
I like Buck. Now, Buck had a wild imagination, but Buck, he could draw you some money. He had some wild stuff, you know, the way he did things. He had knowledge that, you know, stuck in that head somewhere. You know, you look at him, you wouldn't think so, but... Buck did. He was pretty knowledgeable about this, and he knew how to get an angle over, or if he, you know, get things going, get things clicking, suggest things and change things. And I worked for him. He was easy to work for. You know, as long as you know, just kind of listen to him, he guides you the way you want it to go. And I was a good listener anyway. I think that's how I got to get up kind of fast in my career here, because I listen to people. I said, okay, I'll try that. Let me see. I try this. What worked good? What could I get the people up with? What could I make mad with? Just, you know, things. I think I went to bed at night thinking about what could I do to improve myself. My wife said she thought she was wrestling me sometime at night, you know. I guess because I was asleep, and she said, I thought she was going to put me in a hole, you know.
You know, that's kind of what makes you good at the business, though, you know. I mean, if you didn't take it home with you, and if you were always just going to get it done and to leave there and to not think about how you could get better, you didn't get better, you know. And those guys like you and Arn, and we had so many of them that came through there that just really grasped the concept of you know, this ain't this. You don't wait always for the booker to say, here's what you need to do.
Right.
You know, it's great when you've got your own ideas. Robley came in and worked for us in Southeastern.
We had a match that we fought all over Birmingham, all the way to the top and all the way back down. A couple times. We sure did. Yeah.
Yeah. Old Buck, you know, and Buck was a talent, but Buck was a strange talent. He didn't look good, you know, but, he sure could get himself over, and, you know, and I think Watts probably sent him in there to see what we were doing. As a matter of fact,
probably.
I think that was the deal. He said, Buck, go over there and hang out for a few months and see what they're doing over there.
Yeah. But, everybody wanted to know what we were doing down there. I mean, you know, they wanted to go. It was a nice place to live, an easy place to work. Let me come through, you know. I'll put anybody over you want me to. Just let me come through, you know.
Guys were making some money. Guys were doing good and making money and having a good time and a good life.
Right. Yeah, it was great. It was one of the greatest places. Sure was.
Hey, if I could jump in with another Mid-South question for you, Jerry.
Okay.
You're a major star in there as Mr. Olympia. You're in the main events. You're teaming with the biggest star in the territory, the Junkyard Dog. But you had been there a few years earlier without the mask. You had been there as Jerry Stubbs, and you had gotten a nice push. You had wrestled at the Superdome. Did anyone ever recognize you in 1982? Did anyone ever say, you know, that guy's in really good shape, but I think it may be Jerry Stubbs?
I had a few people that kind of looked and so on. And my eyes sometimes get in the way, the way my eyes were, cause somebody said, I've seen those eyes before. You look like you've been here before, you know, this, that, the other. And I just, and so on and so on. But I kept looking better and better and better and trying to wear a different outfit. so that, you know, different masks, different trucks, you know, and dress up a little better. And people were starting to look, and they just forgot about the other part that I came in there and took that Southeast. I'd say, what was it? It was the Louisiana heavyweight title from the Assassin. That was the first bet I ever won. It was a Louisiana title from the Assassin and the Superdome.
Oh, wow. It's a heck of a place to win.
It was good. It was a lot of people there. Most I've ever seen, you know, at the time. But we had some big places that we drew that we went to. And it was something else. It was something else. Back, I wish we could go back and know what we know now.
You know, you brought up Arn earlier, and what was it like in Mid-South? Because you guys had, for a little while, you had a regular crew of undercard guys, of job guys that would come in. You had Billy the Star Child Star that was there. You had various other guys. And then It was a whole new crew. All of a sudden, you had a bunch of guys coming from either Tennessee or Georgia. You had Tim Horner, Dirty White, but Tony Anthony, Arn Anderson, Marty Lundy, and Ted Allen. Arn, when he came in, I mean, that's a pretty impressive crew considering what was there before. I mean, those are four pretty good young workers. Did Arn stand out right away?
Yeah, he did. Arn liked to take bumps, and I kept trying to tell him, don't take so many bumps at one time. You know, you go out there and you take 10 good bumps, and it's like acrobatic stuff. Go out there, you got to work this, do that, and take your time and do something. And he got better and better, Arn did. And Arn's a great worker. He was a great worker and learned fast, too. But yeah, we had Tim Horner, Dirty White Boy, Tony Anthony, and they would come in. Mike Jackson would bring a bunch of them sometime, to work on our TVs and things. And some of them would stay a week or two, and some of them, you know, just come over to do a few TVs. But we did. We had some nice young guys that could move, you know.
I'm going to turn you back over to Ron in 1 second, but one quick question for you, because we've heard so many other guys talk about it. How stiff was Ron in the ring? And talk about the wraparound punch.
Oh, God. Hey, you ought to just let him give you one. Just stand over there in the corner of the room where you have, and let him just grab you and hit you with that wraparound. It will make you see stars, because it wraps all the way around your neck, hits you on the other side of the head. And you know, you can't, you know, Flair will give you that chop, but it ain't nothing like this wraparound. This wraparound here, you know, and you're hoping that, hey, don't get carried away and hit me 3 or 4 times with it. You know, that you can see that hand coming, you know, 1, 2, damn, Ron, 3. Are you going to quit? You know? Whew. You get out of there with them wraparounds, buddy. If you ain't got a headache, you're one hell of a person, I'm telling you. But it was all in it, man. Everybody had something good, you know. And that Fuller leg lock that they had, that was a good move that they had back then, you know. That I think Buddy was the first one that really used that, wasn't it? The Fuller leg lock?
Yeah, yeah.
Robert use it several times. I've seen Ron use it. And that was one a heck of a move. That was one of the best moves I thought when I was growing up. Best move I ever seen.
Yeah, Dad used to do that a lot back in the Atlanta days, man, when you were probably a kid and watching TV some, you know.
Right.
That's kind of where he developed that hole was when we went to Atlanta, probably in 1964 or so. And it was it wasn't just a pretty hole. It was a shooting hole. I mean, You could break a leg with it easily, pretty darn easily. And it was it couldn't have hurt near as bad as a wraparound, though, I guess. I always, everybody complains about my punches, man. I don't understand that, you know.
They complained about you, Ron, not your punches. They complained about you being stiff. Good old days, man. Good old days.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they certainly were, man. You know, oddly enough, the Assassin's name came up. Now, he's in this episode with you in Superstudcast number 22. In fact, he's in the first half of it. So, you know, I thought putting you two guys together made some sense. I didn't even realize that y'all had worked and you won your first championship from him in the Super Bowl.
Louisiana heavyweight championship.
So that's kind of New Orleans. That kind of taking two mass wrestlers and tying them into one here with this particular stud cast. And, you know, it just seemed to work out good, you know, because Jody's he's a pretty unique character, too, when it comes to the business. You know, I mean, his interviews are different. His style of work is different. You know,
He had a lot of knowledge about the business, too. You know, he was a booker, I think, down there for Watch a little bit, too. And I think it was his idea to do me the way he did, you know, bring me in, put the belt on me, a young guy, you know, upcoming, could move pretty good, you know, didn't know a whole lot about the business, but I learned quick. And they did that, and actually I did pretty well, you know, pretty good.
Was that, how early was that in your career?
That had to be, I guess, 80.
Yeah.
80.
So, yeah, you were young. 80. You were young at that point then, man.
I don't feel young now, but I was young. Boy, where's time gone? It just flies by.
Yeah. Well, you know, you're a great worker, Jerry, in the ring. You just, you had it, man. You had the psychology, which is totally lost this day and time. There's no more of that, obviously. You had great ring psychology. You took great bumps. You moved well. You always there. You know, I used to work some with Bockwinkel when I was really young. And then, you know, Nick used to always, he harped on the fact that you got to be there, man. You got to get to the right place, the right time. And, you know, he was such a great worker. He would even tell me sometimes, he would take me in the dressing room after my matches, watching matches. Wasn't always with him. Never got to work with him that much. But he would show me how to, he'd say, now, when you got a headlock, he said, look at your foot. It's turned to the left. I said, well, what difference does that make? And he goes, it makes a lot of difference because the guy's going to shoot you off. You may go to trip him up, whatever, you know. It's like he was just a consummate professional, that guy, you know. And then you kind of became that type of worker, man. You really became a fantastic worker. And, you know, had a heck of a career. You've had a heck of a career. So for an old Southern boy, you've done very, very well, man.
I enjoyed it too, man. Enjoy and still make some shots, you know, and do some take, you know, autographs and take pictures and stuff like that, and get involved a little here and there.
Yeah, you know, that's
still doing kind of when we, of that.
When we started out today, you know, like I said, you're still kind of involved, and you're still running down there in that South Alabama area, and still doing some things that's keeping you involved. And that's a good thing. Good for you, too.
Yeah.
You know, you and I, we've been friends a long, long time. I remember, and you may not even remember this, I remember going to Jamaica, probably 19.
Oh, yeah.
And then buying those wooden heads, right? And I gave you one. I had one of them. It looked just like your head, man. And I said, you know, I bought these they're made out of all different kinds of wood, man. They had some really hard wood down there, ironwood, they call some of that stuff. Uh-huh. And I gave you one of those Jamaican heads that I had that I thought was just perfect for you, man. It looked kind of like you in a way.
That was like, didn't we go to the Caymans one time too?
Yeah, we went down to Caymans. We used to go in there. That was in probably 83, 84, 85. We ran shows. I ran shows in there. Probably I ran six total shows there. But my dad went there first and kind of got that started, and he brought me in on it and introduced me to the two guys he was working with. And we eventually brought Flair in. We had a world championship match in the Cayman Islands And, you know, when you wrestled there, we wrestled outside, right?
Right. Was outside. And
and the ring light was held up by this big, crane, right? Do you remember that?
Yeah.
They had a big old crane that sat in the back of ringside, and they lowered the boom with the ring light on it to down about 20 feet over the ring. And, I mean, there was crazy stuff that we did back in those days. Guy came out away from the Caymans to Pensacola. And I had to go over to the auditorium and set up the wrestling ring so that he could actually see what a wrestling ring looked like, because there was no ring in the Caymans. Nobody had a ring in the Caymans. So he came and he measured out all the parts and all the pieces, and never seen a wrestling ring before, and went back to the Caymans. And then 3 months later, we had a show there. We went over. And it was one of the best wrestling rings I ever worked in. I said, gosh, man, this is unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know, really was a heck of a ring down there. Those people were really talented down there. And the fans, I remember we were in a base. It was like a big old field. There really wasn't even a fence around it. And somehow we were able to keep the fans back and them all buy tickets. It's strange. You couldn't do that in a lot of places in the Caribbean. If you've been in the Bahamas, you wouldn't have sold 10 tickets. everybody in the place would have been in for free, you know. But the Caymanians, they're fine people down there, and totally different than some of the other places in the Caribbean. But we've had all those experiences, and I remember taking the guys down there. I guess we went probably 3 times and took crews. And I was trying to take different guys every time, because it was kind of like everybody wanted to go. I'd say, hey, man, I'm going to run the Caymans. Who wants to go? And everybody was like, every hand went. We all want to go. Right. And we'd go in there. I remember we'd go a day early and put all of you up in the hotels, and then usually take you out fishing or take you to a dive or take you whatever. Day and had big dinner at night together. It was a great time, man. Great time in wrestling, and that was a nice little bonus place there. The Caymans, really, really nice little trip. Worked out good. I'm gonna ask you, man. What was your favorite city to work in?
My favorite city to work in. I think my favorite city was Knoxville when we worked downtown at the big arena down there.
Yeah, Coliseum.
I think that was one of my – that and the Superdome was a good experience, because that was my first big experience. But I enjoyed the atmosphere in Knoxville. We were selling that place out too. You know, down there. And it was good. That night you beat was Terry Funk, wasn't it? I think that was a sold out night too, but that was just a good atmosphere. People were into it. It was just fun to be there, you know. So I think at Knoxville, the Superdome is probably my two best places. And I actually like Mobile in Birmingham, you know. So those places were set up good, you know, but I kind of like Mobile too, because it was kind of my first big time, you know, coming up and all, and being the main events and some stuff like that. So I like Mobile, Birmingham.
Mobile was a dangerous town. I always thought Mobile was a dangerous town, man. They were
nasty. We had to fight there a lot of times in the parking lot to get out.
Yeah, it was a nasty place. The first night we ever ran that town, I got arrested. I got arrested and taken to jail. And my dad warned me before I even went there. He said, yeah, you know, you'd be run Mobile. And I said, no, not yet, but we're going to run it in 3 weeks, because we were late getting our television started there. And he said, boy, all I can do is give you advice. You heal? I said, yeah, I'm healing. And he said, you need to be careful in that town. He said, that's a bad town. And then sure enough, the first night we had a riot and I got taken to jail. I was like, boy, old dad was right about it, man. he was right on.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
We were doing a lot of heat stuff, man. I mean, that's the way you drew money. I mean, you had to do it. You had to do it. And if you didn't, then you were going to have empty seats. And boy, if you got that good heat, you didn't have any empty seats. And that made boys happy when it came payday. Right. Yeah,
that's right.
Everybody got the smile on their face then. What's your most memorable match, man? One that you really
I think my most memorable match was me and Bob Brad Armstrong in Birmingham. I mean, we juiced both. We were bloody going at it and the whole bit, and we must have went 25-30 minutes. And I wished I had that on tape today. Brad told me at one time he had it, but I never did get a copy of it. So, but I think that, you know, I just loved and enjoyed working with that kid, you know?
Oh, man.
And that was my most, that one there, because I guess now because he's gone, you know? And I keep thinking of that and him and some other stuff. But I like that one, but I've had some good ones. Me and Junkyard Dog had some good ones. Me and Ted DiBiase as a team had some. Me and Arn had some. We worked with you and Jimmy Golden and so on, and Robert and the Nightmares. The Nightmares was a good little team, you know, to work with. Back in the day. So there's a lot of them. It's kind of hard to just pin one down, you know, to tell you that was my best. But the one I remember too, you know, I wrestled the world champion in Charlotte one time up there, Harley Race. One of my first matches when I went to Charlotte, I was up there that time. Had a TV match with Harley Race.
Super.
And I wrestled Bob. I wrestled Bob Backlund one time. I had Bob Backlund when he was champion one time. And he came to Atlanta, and I worked a first match. He wanted to go out there. He told him it was his warm up match. He wanted to go out there and wrestle me. I said, "Why you want to wrestle me? I'm new, you know." But you know, I went out there and he made me go 15 minutes. 15 minute draw with Bob Backlund.
Yeah. Well, that's a good. Were you young at that point? Real young?
Yeah. I was just starting. I was still policing.
Geez, man. Well, that's a pretty good start for a young guy, man.
Yeah.
Going through with Backlund. They took care of you.
That was my first match in Atlanta on Friday night, City Auditorium. They put me on that, you know, just for a first match. And I wrestled Bob Backlund. And he made me go 15 minutes.
That's a nice old belt.
You know, I had Luthez. You know, I had Luthez one night in Birmingham. I don't know if y'all remember that. But I had Luthez. You know, he done gotten up in age and all that. If you remember, you know, I went, I had him in a small package and he held me down and they got the 3 count and I beat him and I thought I'd done something wrong. And he said, "No, I wanted it that way." So, okay. Yeah, man.
That's an experience working with him, isn't it? I mean, he had a feel about him when you were locked up with him, you know, you could just tell that he's from a different generation, man. He was from a different time. And he would do some of those things like that wrist lock. When he would get that wrist lock on you and he would shove your hand down in your belly to take you over. And a lot of guys weren't expecting it. And some guys would go face first. If you didn't duck your head good, you know, you're going to take a nasty bump. And I've seen him take those guys and grab that wrist lock and shove that hand in their stomach and take them really fast and just see them pancake face first on the mat. you could almost hear their arms break in the dresser. Like, oh, God, that had to hurt, right?
Oh, I know. You know, somebody that hurt me a couple times I wrestled with him was Abdullah the Butcher. He'd go across and hit that rope, come drop that elbow on you. And it wasn't so much the elbow as all that fat stuff he had underneath.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It kind of landed on you and jarred you so bad, you know?
Yeah.
So,
Yeah, oh yeah, I've worked with that.
All that weight come down on you, don't take your breath.
Yeah, he's got a lot of weight. Abby had a lot of weight, man, and he did. You know, he wasn't going to keep it off of you either. He was like, he made no attempt to try to maintain some of that weight and get it off of your face or whatever. He'd just drop it. There you go. You got it. Here it is, kid. Wham. You know. So it's amazing to some of the guys and some of the things you go through. I don't guess you ever got to work with a guy like Valentine, Johnny Valentine, did you?
No, I did Greg, but I didn't have Johnny. I think he was kind of out of it when I kind of started, you know. I did go up through Charlotte and had Flair and Dusty and some of those, you know, Blackjack Mulligan. Shoot some of them others up there, you know, Reggie Parks. A lot of people don't know them people, but those are some of the people up, Ricky Steamboat, you know.
Yeah, great worker there.
Yeah, real good. So,
yeah.
Wish I could go back and start all over.
Oh, yeah, man. Did you work any territories other than Charlotte, Southeastern, Continental, Mid-South? You go to any other countries other than Japan?
Went to Australia for 6 weeks.
There you go, man. Yeah, how you like that country?
Oh, I liked it. You know, the only thing I didn't like is, you know, they had some pretty women over there, but when they turned around and smiled, their teeth was dingy. Yeah. I said, I ain't drinking the water over here. It must be doing something to the teeth.
Yeah, you know, they did have pretty women over there. They sure did. You know, it's a beautiful country and, you know, a great place to work. Who was in your crew over there in Australia, man? Who was
in that? I think we had the Road Warriors over there. I think Dorian and Terry Funk was there. It was like a team thing.
Right.
I was over there with Tiger Jet Singh as the Ashik. I went Ashik.
Right.
So. And I was trying to think of who else was over there. I think maybe Kurt Hennin and Nelson Roll, I think, was on now.
Oh, geez. There's a pretty stiff little
Nelson
guy.
You remember Nelson Roll?
Yeah. You worked with him?
Yep. Worked with him several times for that world junior belt.
Yeah. There's a tough guy right there, man. And he's pretty stiff, too. No.
Oh, yeah. He's stiff. Yeah. He didn't let you take much advantage of his matches either.
Yeah, no, you had to take it. If you wanted it, you had to take it with him.
Right.
you better go get it. Or you're going to make you look bad. No. Yeah, that's a good name. I hadn't thought about Nelson in a long time. He worked for me quite a bit in Southeastern in 75 when I first started. Just a heck of a guy. I really like Nelson. Really good friend. So you've had a lot of good experiences. Who was there in Australia? Was Barnett gone at that point when you were there?
I don't think Barnett was gone. I think he was there. Of course, you know, we didn't see him much over there.
Yeah.
But I think he was there. I think he was there. And then the next place I saw him was Atlanta.
Right.
Know? So.
Yeah, he was a. You know, did he ever come to the matches and come downstairs and, you know, want to talk to the boys, get everybody together? You doing that, any of that still back in that day?
Oh, Jimsy did. Jimsy came down there.
No, want to ask about them, ask about the rats. Who's taking care of the rats? You know, I can hear him now.
He's something else, man.
Ace, man. A lot of characters in the wrestling, in the sport of wrestling. And not all of them are in the ring either, you know. Some of them are the promoters, some of them are referees. And you run into all kinds of strange characters in wrestling.
And still do.
Yeah, and still do. Yeah, and going to continue. You know, I'm sure it's probably somewhat similar in that respect. You got to be kind of a... not all together there to want to be a wrestler sometimes. let me ask you a little bit about, you know, I, on my regular Studcast, I'm at a point in 1975 where I got my first bad injury, a collarbone injury. A really nasty one where, you know, shoved the collarbone out of your joint that goes into your sternum. And it took me like 2 months to get well, to get to where I could even wrestle again. How about injuries, man? Have you had bad injuries? You had any of that?
Well, you know, down there when I was working at Southeastern or Continental, I hurt my leg in Mobile one night. I went over the ropes and hit my calf or something on the edge of the rope, or, I mean the ring, and then I guess I wrapped it too tight several times because it formed a blood clot.
I remember the blood clot deal, man. That's a dangerous situation there too, man.
Yeah, I was working in Pensacola, downtown there in Pensacola, right there at the on the water, and just didn't feel right, you know. And I actually waited till the next morning. Then I went to my doctor, and he said, "You're not going anywhere. I'm sending you to the hospital." And they started feeding me rat poison and everything, trying to dissolve this blood clot and all. And I was out for a while. Yeah, I think I was out over a year, or close to a year or so, or whatever. And that kind of hindered me a lot, you know, after that, you know, for years and years. You know, didn't want to work out, didn't want to do this, you know, lost some weight. But, you know, hung in there and all. But I tell you, it could have killed me.
Oh, hell yeah. I mean, you don't want to have a problem like that. That's a darn sure difficult deal there. No, no. You know, and it's you learn to work hurt, but there's sometimes when you get hurt so bad you just can't work. You know, and that's one of those situations where you got to listen to the doctor. Lots of times, you know, you go and see him, and they used to drain my knees a lot. And the guy would say, "Hey, Ron, no wrestling for 2 weeks, nothing," you know. And I'd say, "Yeah, okay, doc." And I'd be back there 2 days later, and he'd say, "How did this get like that?" And I said, "Well, I wrestled on it the night after I left to see you, doc." So, I mean, you just go on and do your thing, you know. You got to do your thing, and you work hurt a lot, you know. It's you get kind of accustomed to it, I guess, but
you do. You
collarbone injury I had was really a bad one, and it took me a long time to get over that. And it's just part of the game. Everybody got hurt at one time.
And older you get, the longer it takes to heal. You know, so I had this 4-way bypass, and then I had a pacemaker put in after that. And then I just had my second pacemaker put in, I guess, 4 weeks ago, 4 or 5 weeks ago, you know. So I can't keep having those things. Those things cost me about $80,000 a piece.
Oh, geez, man.
Yeah. Thank goodness I got insurance, but, you know, it don't pay at all.
Yeah.
But, yeah, those things are expensive.
Oh, yeah, man. No.
Hey, this one here, they put several more wires in, and this one's supposed to, if my heart don't get where it's not beating where it's like it's supposed to, it's supposed to, like it's a fibrillator. It gives you a jolt.
It jumps you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So to keep it, to get it back in rhythm. So I asked the girl, I said, "Well, how does it feel?" She said, "Well, I ain't never had it, but," she said, "they tell me it's like a horse kicked you in the chest." I said, "Well, thanks." And she said, "And some people get it 2 or 3 times and they pass out." I said, "Well, I really got something to look forward to." Damn.
So can you control that?
Like a horse and shoot.
Can you control that when it jumps?
No, it gets to a certain point. If I'm doing something, or if I overdo something, or something like that, and the heart's not connected, they say, you know, beating right, to get it back, they said it's I guess it's like they hit you with them paddles.
Oh, is that right? Yeah, I guess so. I'm not lucky. I haven't been involved in any of that. Thank goodness.
You better hope you ain't, man. You know, you don't want to. Of course, I hadn't had it. I don't I try not to get it or overexert it or nothing like that. You know, I don't want to really feed it.
Do you, I know you got a boat lately, man. I saw your boat. I was with you the day you bought your boat, man.
But you ain't going to believe it. You ain't going to believe it. Now I'm talking to you, and I sold it. I sold it 2 weeks ago. Yeah, sold
it. Well, you didn't get to use it much or what?
Not much. I mean, I did use it several times, but I had a chance to sell it and get out of it, and I went ahead and sold it. I said, I'll buy me another later if I want to. But, you know, my dad died, and we tried to, we had to probate the will and all this, and we just got it finished. And I had to buy my sister and my brother out of their part, and we just cleared all that up. So that was last week. And still trying to get some of those papers finished. But it's just been one thing after another, you know. So I went ahead and sold it.
Yeah, man. Sorry to hear that. I was looking forward to a little bit of that crappie fishing, man.
Hey, we can still do that. My son-in-law's got one. We can do that.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I may call you to do some of that. So you're still involved with the police department? Are you still doing stuff with them?
Yeah, I still work for the sheriff's department. Clayton County Sheriff's Office. I actually work for the magistrate court. I let the judges and the lawyers in and handle magistrate, but I was up on Superior Court handling all the lawyers and the judges there, but I transferred down to that. I only work every other week. You know, I go in at 12 and get off at 5. That's every other week. That's just right. To give me something to do and so on and so on. So stay involved. Find out what's going on around anyway.
Well, you've had a long relationship with that. That policeman in that area.
Right. Yeah, I worked for Forest Park City Police Department for years, 18, matter of fact, and several years for the county. So, I haven't even worked the county public works. I had 160 employees, man, at one time. So,
jeez.
But yeah, I did that. So I've done a little bit of everything.
Well, man, you've had a great career, great life, I'm real thankful, man, for you coming on the program here with me. Been wanting to do one with you, and had a lot of people asking me about it, doing you, and this has been. It's really been enjoyable for me to be able to spend the time with you. I've learned a lot today. I learn a lot every one of these Super Studcasts I do. I thought I knew people, but I wasn't really aware of a whole lot of things that we've gotten into today. And it's really been my pleasure, man, to have you on with me. You are one of those classic guys that just seemed to have it from the very beginning. You gave your heart and soul to the business, and you always kept a good reputation. Guys wanted to use you. That's I can see why Watts liked using you, because you never got yourself in trouble. You were a gentleman always, and just a darn good person, Jerry. Former policeman. You're a good role model for a whole lot of people. And young guys, if they have the opportunity to spend some time with you, especially guys that are trying to be wrestlers anymore, they would serve them well to spend time with you, man. That's for sure. And just want to thank you for having you on here today, my man. And
I appreciate it, man. I really enjoyed it. You know, maybe we can do it again.
Yeah, maybe we can. And we will. I'll be seeing you soon. I'll be seeing you probably in Dothan in the next couple of weeks, probably.
All right, man.
Okay.
Good talking to y'all.
Okay. Thanks.
See you, Brian.
Take care, Jerry.
Thank you for being a patron and supporting all Studcast with your donation for this month's Super Studcast and the rest of the story. We're honored to bring these super events to our growing list of donors and appreciate your comments and feedback so we can continue to improve upon the 3 hours of unique and focused content we hope you've enjoyed. We encourage you to tell your friends about the Super Studcast and the rest of the story so the stud can continue to highlight the awesome history of his family and the sport we all love. So saddle up and ride the second and fourth Sunday of each month as we open the vault and spotlight wrestling history. This is David Summers thanking you on behalf of all the staff, including the great Brian Last and Ron Fuller, the Tennessee Stud, saying so long from the great Smoky Mountains. Another Super Studcast is done.